From Saxonburg to Camp Hill, Danville to Greenville, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the push by radical environmentalists to ban plastic and polystyrene products poses a threat to Pennsylvania's growing plastics industry. David Taylor is joined for a Capital Watch look at the issue by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business and by Carl Marrera from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. And now that Labor Day is past, political campaigns are shifting into high gear. Will there be a blue wave? I'll have a town hall commentary on why a subtle shift is more likely. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. Good news for Pennsylvanians planning to visit Mickey and Minnie in Orlando. Your Pennsylvania Turnpike Easy Pass transponder will now work on the Central Florida Expressway. Unfortunately, South Carolina and Georgia have yet to get with the program, so if you travel a toll road in those states, you will still need to keep some cash handy. Easy Pass will now be used on 118 miles of expressway in the Orlando area, but if you travel farther south, you will be invoiced for tolls under Florida's toll-by-plate plan. In yet another sign, he may be the one Pennsylvania incumbent Democratic congressman in jeopardy this year. Matt Cartwright has agreed to more debates with his Republican challenger, John Chirin. Under the newly gerrymandered congressional district plan imposed by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, Cartwright finds himself running in areas he previously did not represent and areas that voted heavily for Donald Trump in 2016. Across the state, the National Republican Campaign Committee has pulled back some of its advertising for September, but still has time reserved to help GOP incumbents in that area in October. The Pittsburgh region features the only race in the state that pits two incumbents against each other. Congressman Keith Rothfuss and Connor Lamb are fighting over the same seat due to redistricting. The district voted marginally for Donald Trump in 2016 and is seen as among the most competitive in the state this year. Efforts to change state law to allow victims of abuse at the hands of Catholic priests to retroactively file lawsuits have hit a road bump in the form of State Senate President Pro Tem Joseph Scarnati. Apparently thinking he is a Supreme Court justice, Scarnati says while he would vote to support the change, he believes it to be unconstitutional. In the wake of the grand jury report detailing child sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, there has been growing momentum in the state legislature for amending the law to allow the retroactive filing of lawsuits by abuse victims. Read about all things Pennsylvania on the all-new patownhall.com. First, it was plastic straws, then plastic bags. Now those polystyrene products that keep your food warm all are in the crosshairs of radical environmentalists waging war on carbon-based products. But hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians have jobs in the industries that manufacture such products, and that is a growth industry for our state. David Taylor is here to lead a Capital Watch discussion on the issue. He is joined today by Rebecca Euler and Carl Marrera. David.
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. Rebecca, thanks for being on the program.
Great to be here. Thanks, David.
And in the studio, Carl Marrera, PMA's Vice President of Government Affairs. Carl, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be here as always.
So, we have new toys to play with at PMA, and we have our first project of a new econometric tool. And Carl, why don't you lay this out, what this new piece of gear is that we have?
So the new tool, there's two different forms of economic analysis. There's stagnant, which is really just a simple subtraction or division problem. If you, a great example would be the reduction of a tax rate. for example. So if we reduce, let's say, the corporate net income rate in Pennsylvania from 9.99 to 6.99, we would look at, well, what are the current revenues? And if we decreased it to 6.99, that's how much less money we would get. So that's how much less the Commonwealth would receive. And that's a very stagnant form of modeling. It doesn't account for any kind of growth
that would occur. It assumes that nothing would change.
It assumes
even
nothing
though the rules
changes.
Would change, it assumes that people's behavior wouldn't change.
Correct.
But that's
correct.
That's not true.
And you know what? Stagnant is a great word for it because it exactly like you said, nothing changes. So let's look at what actually happens in the real world, mm-hmm. and that is mm-hmm. what is called dynamic scoring. And dynamic scoring accounts for different behaviors, situations that occur. So tax rates lower, price hikes go up. It takes into account that human behavior, the market functions, mm-hmm. if you will.
Right.
And it gives you a more dynamic analysis of what happens. So we at PMA have a new tool called M-Plan where we can play with numbers mm-hmm. and see what ends up happening out there in the real world marketplace and try to anticipate what would happen from a public policy standpoint with those different returns.
Yes. And so anyway, we have a tryout. We have a first maiden voyage for this that there was a bonehead piece of legislation that came down the line. And Rebecca, you're painfully familiar with all this, that the members of the General Assembly think they're helping when they try to micromanage the private sector and control the parameters in which we operate. And so this first bill that we have teed up, it's an analysis of a ban on polystyrene in eating establishments or places where food is served.
Yes, this is a House Bill 2560 by Representative Briggs, has a proposal to ban polystyrene in the state. And this would impact any business that serves food, basically, including small restaurants, coffee shops, taverns, catering
convenience
shops,
stores.
Convenience stores, right, grocery stores, food trucks even, and even farm stands that may sell eggs in egg cartons. So a lot of small businesses impacted by this particular proposal. So we are interested in PMA's analysis of the dynamic scoring of this proposal, and we're anxious to hear what the real impact is because I don't think people really look at the real impacts of proposals like this in the General Assembly or even elsewhere.
Well, and before we actually cut to that, let me just note for the record, first of all, this is a legal product. This is just another material that we use in our everyday lives. This is not – it's not toxic. It's mm-hmm. recyclable. Why – you know, this particular material would be villainized is just beyond me. So, like, if there's something dangerous or unhealthy, ban it. Go ahead and ban it. But for so long as it's a legal product, why shouldn't it be used? So anyway, Carl, take it away.
Sure. I mean, polystyrene really is just a fancy name for styrofoam. I mean, it's plastic cups and bags and liners, trays for eggs and meat and other perishables. It's everywhere in the food service industry because it's sanitary and it's affordable. And, you know, as Rebecca said, by food service establishments, we're not just talking restaurants. It's all gas stations and grocery stores, convenience stores, even things like a concession stand would fall under this piece of legislation. And all the fines that could be accrued for these violations could be up to $2,000 for a single violation. I mean, that's a nightmare for small businesses especially. So
yes.
As you said, we at the Manufacturers Association ran some economic analysis, and the results were fascinating and terrifying. So let's lay a little bit of groundwork. According to IBIS World Industry Report from late 2015, 70% of all polystyrene foam manufacturing is segmented in the packaging and storing products and in the consumer and institutional products category. Both of these are categories primarily made up of products that are banned under House Bill 2560. Because the margins in this industry are so little, I mean, think about what does it really cost for a retailer to buy one of those little clamshell takeout containers or a styrofoam cup. The margins in this industry are very, very low. So location is really, really important to the manufacturers of these products because that's less transportation costs and getting it to the consumer.
Right.
So it's clear that Pennsylvania actually has a sweet spot. Pennsylvania is a sweet spot for polystyrene manufacturing because we have both the customer base, because mm-hmm. we are close to major, major markets, and we have a lot of the manufacturing activity that happens here. So 70% of the products, polystyrene products, are geared toward the food service industry. So if we actually take 70% of the polystyrene manufacturing activity that's occurring in Pennsylvania and take that out of the economy,
mm-hmm.
it comes to about a $1 billion impact across all sectors in Pennsylvania.
It's $1,000 million.
That is $1,000 million. Wow. So its impact is 4,000 jobs, nearly $240 million in labor income, and again, over $1 billion in economic
output. And this is what is lost.
That's what's lost out of the economy.
4,000 jobs. And how much in wages again?
That would be $240 million.
Worth of wages. Destroyed. Gone.
Carl, where would that go? Where would that investment go?
Well, you could look at some of that investment could go to a different sector or a different kind of packaging product. But often those are more expensive. They are not as readily available for consumers. And, there's been some similar type of proposals that have been done in cities. I think San Francisco was one where they tried to do this.
Yes. I looked at San Francisco because I was curious about that. And a study came out of San Francisco after they banned polystyrene, which found it actually did not result in less litter or less trash around the city as they hoped. And in fact, there was no reduction in waste that they found. And it increases costs, like Carl said. The margin on these products is really small. The replacements cost about two times, about twice what the polystyrene products cost. So you have to really think about whether or not when you put a limitation into effect like this, whether the cost is really worth the benefit. And I'm not sure that they found that to be the case in San Francisco.
Again, because polystyrene is it's sanitary,
recyclable.
It's non-toxic, it's recyclable.
Right.
You know, that it just, again, this is self-defeating.
And here's the even more alarming story that can't even be captured by that dynamic economic analysis. But this makes it even worse. I don't want to get too scientific, and I had to look all this up because I'm not that smart myself. but polystyrene has its chemical compositional footprint in natural gas liquids.
Mm-hmm.
Polystyrene is one of the world's top five most commonly produced plastics, and it's a polymer made up of the monomer styrene.
Mm-hmm.
Styrene is typically manufactured from ethylene or benzene, which itself is derived from natural gas.
Yes.
So with the vast polystyrene manufacturing that we have in Pennsylvania, and with Pennsylvania's new discovery of natural gas and the natural gas liquids and products, things like the Shell petrochemical plant going out in Beaver County, the new emerging plastics manufacturing industry in Pennsylvania, we should be trying to attract everything that ends with poly and ends with ene to come here to our Commonwealth, when this legislation is the complete antithesis of that. And I mean, if we really want to get serious about economic development, if we really want to get serious about growth in manufacturing and the multiplier effect that it can have, just as the steel industry and the iron industry in Pennsylvania was the stuff that built the other stuff, the plastics industry will be the stuff that builds the other stuff and is that multiplier effect in the manufacturing industry. And there's a proposal right now in our state legislature to basically take it and throw it out the window and forget it was ever here in the first place.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from PMA. Here in the program, Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania and my man Carl Moreira also from PMA. So let's just put a pin in it. Let's focus on that. So for all of us who are excited beyond belief about the multi-billion dollar investment coming to Beaver County, to Monaca, to the Royal Dutch Shell plant, where they're going to build a massive facility, a petrochemical facility to take ethane, which is one of the byproducts from the natural gas, the methane out in western PA. They're going to take that ethane, crack a hydrogen molecule off of it, and turn it into ethylene. That ethylene, depending on how you derive it, can yield all kinds of different products, including polystyrene. So we're talking here about a state legislator who is looking to ban one of the products that we will now be able to mass produce here in Pennsylvania because of this resource. It's just – it's completely at odds with the opportunity that is before us.
So absolutely, of course. So it's, we obviously have the upstream supply. We're working on improving that here in Pennsylvania, the natural gas resource. And we have the downstream market for these products being situated here on the East Coast with a lot of economic activity around us. So you're absolutely right, David. Why would we shoot ourselves in the foot and ban a product which would bring a lot of opportunity for Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania businesses?
So that other 30% that's not used in the food service industry is used in areas like aerospace and vehicle safety. I would consider those to be fairly important. But here's the really funny one. One of the other main uses of polystyrene is actually in the building trades because it is some of the best insulation material that exists to help control heating and cooling costs and overall energy usage in our power grid to actually maximize energy efficiency. What do you think happens to that other 30% of the manufacturing activity of polystyrene if 70% of it disappears?
There's an irrational bias against this particular kind of, you know, sanitary food container. There's also an irrational bias against grocery bags.
Yes, that's right. The governor actually vetoed a bill, House Bill 1071 by Representative Frank Ferry, which would have prohibited municipalities from taxing or banning plastic bags.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another area where we'd be concerned because increasing the cost of bags for businesses really impacts their bottom line. And the replacements, again, sort of like the polystyrene, are much more expensive. And I think this is another example where the like Carl made the excellent point of unintended consequences is a lot of times when policymakers in Harrisburg consider policies like this, bans like this that we're talking about, they tend to overestimate the impact, the environmental impact on
the positive,
on
impact.
The positive impact, and then drastically underestimate the impact on business.
Why don't we try to incentivize or at least help industry with the recovery of these materials? Maybe rather than banning a product in its entirety, maybe the government could be a better partner in finding ways to recycle these materials. As you mentioned, Dave, it's a misconception that polystyrene is recyclable. In fact, Dart Container in Lancaster County, they have invested millions of dollars in recycling facilities to recapture some of these materials rather than, again, focusing all of our efforts into banning a product. Let's work on recapturing those products, reusing those products that, I mean, are obviously necessary in today's society.
On the part of the lawmakers, it's like that's not actually your job to control people and their lives and their choices. What we should be doing, what you should be doing as a lawmaker is, looking at the big picture, trying to protect public health and public safety. And these are two examples where public health and public safety is not impacted to the negative at all. And helping to surround those surround Pennsylvania with parameters that will allow for growth and investment and dynamism and prosperity and all the things that are gonna raise up our quality of life.
And to the lawmakers that are on board with things like this, I would caution you: don't feed the alligators, because the folks that are going to just continue to knock on your door about proposals similar to this are never going to be satisfied with anything that you do. One of the examples that we kind of uses, I don't want to say jokingly, because it unfortunately became all too true, is the circus, right?
Yep,
The activists said, take the elephants away from the circus. So what did the circus do? They took the elephants away. And then it became big cats. And then it became the circus in general. There is no more circus.
Correct.
So they will never be satisfied with the end result.
Well, and I think the impact of that is more and more regulation, more and more restrictions, like you said, that sort of tend to build up over time. And especially for small businesses that operate in razor-thin margins, adding just one more onerous regulation is just another cost, another impact, another, administrative issue that they have to deal with.
And who is to say which is the straw that breaks the camel's back?
Right, yeah.
And Rebecca, remind me again, where does the fine money go to, and who is the regulatory agency who would do the inspections?
Well, the fine money, the bill actually has it going to the Department of Environmental Protection.
On the food safety, on the styrofoam bill, why wouldn't it be the Department of Agriculture?
Who's actually in charge of inspecting restaurants and knowing what?
Well, and again, this just goes to show that it's a power play on the part of the Radical Greens, that this is, they want to create another pot of money that they can reach into.
But this is what the productive sector faces every day. It's not just proposals that end here, like you said. It's the constant battle that the productive sector of the economy faces in dealing with state government, dealing with agencies. It's the gotcha mentality rather than government as a partner helping the productive sector do what it does, innovate, and hire and prosper.
And this is one of my main points. The public good that results from regulation is compliance. That this is the reason why the regulations, we assume, exist, is because when the public follows those rules, that the behavior is better for society. And so this is why the state should be a partner in compliance rather than engaging in that kind of gotcha mentality. So anyway, we're almost out of time here. But anyway, folks, thanks for being on the program. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and the things that you do?
They can visit our website at www.nfib.com/PA.
And Carl, where can folks go to learn more about you and the research that you've done?
Well, you can find all of our information at www.pamanufacturers.org, and you can also find us on Facebook and Twitter.
And you can also find us on the Pennsylvania Cable Network Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. So for Carl and Rebecca, we thank you very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. Labor Day is still considered to be the traditional kickoff of the general election campaigns, despite the fact the nation has settled into perpetual campaign mode. In recent weeks, there has been a spate of columns by mainstream media types pointing out the challenges Republicans face in the upcoming election. There has been little by way of analysis of the difficulties facing Democrats. The possibility of a blue wave is baked into conventional wisdom, although there is little evidence to suggest a profound realignment of the electorate will take place this year that will undo the populist surge of 2016. This is not to suggest Democrats will not make congressional gains. History tells us the first midterm after election of a new president is usually not kind to his party. The electorate is sharply divided, and closely so. So therefore, minor shifts in voting patterns could have an outsized impact on the partisan composition of the next Congress. Let us take a look, then, at the challenges facing Democrats as they seek to regain some modicum of power in the federal government. Former Bill Clinton campaign manager Jim Carville once famously summed up what determines elections by saying, "It's the economy, stupid." That was true in 1992. It is true today. And the surging U.S. economy represents the biggest hurdle facing Democrats this November. There are more jobs available than workers seeking employment. Unemployment among traditional Democrat constituencies, especially African Americans, is at an all-time low, and the president's approval rating in that category is at an all-time high. Adding fuel to the economic fire are the tax cuts passed by Congress and signed into law by President Trump at the end of last year. By November, the full impact of those cuts will be felt by taxpayers. As has happened with past tax cuts, the current round has spurred increased economic activity, which has resulted in rising wages. More Americans are working, workers are getting paid more, and paying less in taxes, all a boost for the party in power. Most pundits predicting a blue wave focus on Democrat chances in the U.S. House of Representatives, which indeed is in play. They don't talk about the U.S. Senate, because the GOP likely will make gains in that chamber, and that doesn't fit the narrative. Here is the reason why Democrat chances of taking over that chamber are bleak. 23 seats currently held by Democrats are up for election this year. Just 11 Republican seats are in cycle. Even worse for Democrats, 10 of those 23 seats are in states won in 2016 by Donald Trump. The most recent round of polling shows Republican-held seats are at risk in just 3 states. In as many as 8 or 9 states, Democrat incumbents trail their Republican challengers, or the races are within the statistical margin of error. The narrow middle of the electorate gets scared when either party veers too far to the extreme. This year, Democrats are experiencing a wave of ultra-left-wing socialist activity, with the so-called Democratic Socialists ascendant within the party. Such extremism turns off independent voters, particularly those in more affluent suburbs, where many congressional and statewide elections are decided. Those voters understand they will be the ones paying for the free education, health care, and guaranteed minimum incomes promised by the socialists. There have been a number of congressional special elections since Donald Trump arrived at the White House. Promoters of the blue wave point to them as evidence of a pending GOP meltdown. While those races have been competitive, and many produced razor-thin margins, Democrats have won but one GOP-held seat. That was the election of Connor Lamb in a suburban Pittsburgh district that sports a 60% Democratic registration advantage. Special elections also tend to be not good bellwethers. Attention of the entire political world focuses on special elections, with huge amounts of national money flowing into the candidates' coffers. They have a national spotlight and attract the efforts of activists from across the country. In November, there will be hundreds of contested congressional races. All but a handful will be fought in relative anonymity. This is not to suggest Democrats will not regain control of the U.S. House. After all, only a minor shift in voter loyalty in politically fickle suburbs could flip the 23 seats needed. If that happens, and that remains in doubt, left-wing pundits will undoubtedly look at a subtle shift in the current and label it a blue wave. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 23 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth. They include WCHEAM in Westchester, WEDOAM in White Oak, along with WAEPAM in Whitehall, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle. All of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.